This book grows out of the expressed desires of the people who have attended my workshops and lectures on understanding homophobia, or on sexuality and gender, for the last 10 years. They have been newcomers to the topic, as well as seasoned veterans and activists who were looking for something more than the usual analyses, something that made sense regarding the difficulty of dealing with and the apparent cultural stuckness over this issue. They asked for something further to read and consider as they contemplated their next step toward healing our culture's diseases of sexual confusion, gender rigidity, homophobia, and the oppression of transgendered and bisexual people and gay men and lesbians. They were PFLAG members, religious leaders, activists, teachers, professors, social workers, seminary, college, and high school students, heterosexual, bisexual, homosexual, and uncertain sexual people, upper, middle, and working class people, and others who found something in my presentations that made sense to them and helped them progress in their lives, work, loves, and leadership. Like those presentations, the value of what is found here is whether it makes sense to you and works for you. If it does, it is yours to help you move toward your humanity as you define it for yourself. If it doesn't all fit, take what helps and let the rest go. I put this forward because many have found it a breakthrough in their understanding, something helpful in relating to their own experiences, and something that touches what they already somehow knew was true. I don't suggest that this is the only way to understand these issues of the title of the book, but I think it is an essential key to where we are as we begin the 21st century. I would like to believe that our society has already moved beyond what this book says is the current conditioning. There is no question to me that we have made progress in our general cultural consciousness. There may be some people who feel that we have moved on. I often find these to be the people who have made it financially or professionally in the system. Yet again and again, as I travel around the country, I find that this book is still crucial. I read the news stories which tell of the religious, legal, political, and social backlash against the progress that sexual minorities have made. I speak to high school and university students around the country who, when hearing these ideas, rather than responding that this no longer is their experience, tell stories of how this is still hopelessly so true. I stand in a metro station in downtown Washington, D.C., and hear the same slurs against fags that I hear everywhere else, and so I move in to stand close to those who are using them, so they know someone is listening who might object. I hear the fear of clergy who know this is right and discrimination is wrong, but might lose their pulpits and congregations if they push the issue. I speak to parents of gay men, lesbians, transgendered, and bisexual people, and hear their pain as they come to accept, value, and work to end discrimination they and their children are still experiencing. I sit in the debates of churches who want to be affirming and yet worry that we might become a gay church, indicating that gay is still a negative thing for them. I listen to gay people as they argue with each other over leadership, tactics, money, sex, gender issues, strategies, and how to and whether or not to assimilate, and I see it deplete their energy. And I see members of the gay community still acting out of victim role and living in shame over the fact that they are sexual beings who love their same sex, even translating that shame into political strategies which hide same-sex sexuality. On top of all this, even after decades of the second wave of a woman's movement which has taught us much, and a shorter men's movement in which men were trying to break out of conditioned gender patterns, I still see a nation obsessed with maintaining gender roles and continuing to promote a national foreign policy based on conditioned ideas of male honor and shame. I see woman leaders who have often tried to make it in this straight, masculine-defined society continuing to be misrepresented in mainstream media and others frustrated and burned out over a sense of being bogged down. I see men's groups struggling to know why they exist and where to go next. I see therapists who are still trying to help people cope with a system that is profit-oriented and coping-oriented, not human-oriented or healing-oriented. We still have quite a way to go to crack the hold of a dysfunctional masculinity on the world and the corresponding feminine gender role, which is still one telling women that the answer to their problems is to respond to male conditioning. I am convinced that issues of gender roles, what is masculinity, what is femininity, go hand in hand with the acceptance of people who do not identify as heterosexual. And I am convinced that these issues are deeper and more destructive to our humanity than many of us have imagined. These are not just theoretical questions or surface issues easily educated away, but deeply inculcated elements of the way we are accustomed to see things. Hence the two subtitles of this book. We will not be in touch with what it is to be human as long as we cannot accept, affirm, and value transgendered and bisexual people and lesbians and gay men. Many people and experiences have influenced me in writing this book. Actually, the readings at the end of the chapter were discovered subsequent to the ideas here, but they are listed to encourage further study and personal growth, and to allow me to affirm something of the breadth of the community in which I write and work. I have also read many of the conservative responses to these writings and found that those I recommend stand up against the critics who don't want to change the structure of things. Those who have attended my workshops have added so much to my understanding. What is exciting is that they have come with such a variety of backgrounds. I remember an early workshop for the Methodist parishes in extreme northern Kansas, held in the small town of Byrne, which is up near the Kansas-Nebraska border. Those 30 people who committed a half day to this work were the first to teach me that all over the country, in places which seem to be the middle of nowhere to city folk, there are people, yes, even religious people, who know that something is wrong with the current dominant rhetoric of anti-gay religious and political extremists. The challenge is that no one is speaking with them to affirm their intuitive suspicions and to give them the chance to grow on the issue of understanding and dismantling homophobia. Since that experience, I have understood what many settled leaders in the big cities on the coasts seem to miss. There is more intelligence and anxious but hopeful waiting out there than we can imagine. The stories of people's lives I hear in these workshops and in response to lectures affirm this work. Teach me much, and feed my hope. Chapter 7 is a narrative form of some of the work I facilitate in workshops for transgendered and bisexual people, and lesbians and gay men, on the next step after coming out. It is meant to help us understand the propensity people who have been victimized by our culture have to live the victim role in which society wants them stuck. It is important for me to say here that I do not want to blame the victim for the real oppression that takes place daily in our culture and is often ignored by the mainstream. Yet, many gay people have responded that the workshop on moving out of the victim role that our culture expects them to live is a powerful process in understanding what is going on, particularly if they have tried to be activists, and in seeing their place in gaining back their power and perspective. Nothing in this book is meant to blame anyone. I am convinced that there are no human enemies. People tend to be doing the best they can, given their own personal past hurts and the pressures of a dysfunctional cultural and social system. The enemy to be changed is the system that humans have set up and continue to worship. I have yet to meet a human being that is violent and hateful who is not telling me by her or his actions how she or he was brought up. I suspect this is what was meant by a disciple of Jesus of Nazareth when he wrote, "We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and power." I owe my initial inspiration to an international men's workshop leader, Charlie Kreener. His fingerprints are all over this book. Yet I do not want him to be held responsible for what is here, because this is my version. Interpreted, selected, expanded, adjusted, and enlightened by the people and writers I have since encountered. Much of what I have said here has been said before in scattered books and articles by feminist writers, most of whom are women. As you will no doubt understand by the time you have read this book, however, given the continuing presence of sexism in our culture, when a white male says the same things, more people listen. I personally owe these thinkers a great debt. I am trying to be one of the white males who is listening to what they have had to say and who believes them. My students have heard and wrestled with what I have written here. They too have been a great resource for the development of these ideas, especially those students who have journaled their way through my religious perspectives on selfhood and sexuality. The graduate students who argued with me in my seminars on religion and gender, and students in other courses who have heard my guest lectures. Fellow members of the Lawrence Men's Group have encouraged me and listened to portions of the evolving manuscript. Many others have read portions of the material found here, and some, all of it. They represent a variety of backgrounds, perspectives, and sexual orientations. They have encouraged me and given me much good advice, not all of which I have taken. The list includes Paul Smith, Mel White, Urvashi Vaid, L. William Countryman, Marilyn Klaus, Paul and Shelley Haughey, Paul Bonin Rodriguez, Will Sherwood, Tim Malone, Myra Monson, Robert Klein, Lindsay Gaston, Thad Holcomb, Mike Silverman, Richard Bryan, and David Comerford. So I am fully responsible for what appears here and hoping to continue to learn more as I interact with people over these issues. I want to thank Myra Monson and Brenda Bobo Fisher of Humanity Works for their encouragement and support. They are far more than publishers. They are my loving, long-term friends of justice, compassion, and humanity. And finally, I want to thank Gary Rockhold for designing the cover, laying out the text, and providing me with much more that has made the time in which I completed this project one of the best of my life. This book is dedicated to all who have gone before me in the struggles for acceptance and affirmation of any people who have been discriminated against, demonized, hurt, killed, and marginalized because they did not fit the dominant idea of what it is to be human. It is dedicated to those who have given their lives or had lives taken from them because those human beings did not fit in. It is dedicated to those whom our institutions shunned and condemned, some institutions even while believing this is compatible with unconditional love, because our culture needed scapegoats to blame for its failures. And it is dedicated to those who come after me, who I believe will see that living in fears, such as being scared straight, is no way for any human being to walk on our earth. Finally, it is dedicated to my circle of good friends who have loved and supported me through better or worse, sickness and health, love and loss, and everything in between. I look forward with excitement to the continual widening of that circle through this book and through meeting others who are on this journey out of fear, isolation, and the limits society imposes on us, the straight role, and toward the reappearance of their humanity. The world awaits the reemergence of such human beings again.